So welcome to the Atom Ventures podcast. I'm here with Benjamin Kane from TechPods, sitting in sunny Sofia in Bulgaria. Hello, Ben.
Hello, mate. Thank you very much for coming to visit.
So I've been out here in Bulgaria for the last week working alongside the guys at TechPods and actually just getting to learn a little bit more about Bulgaria, the tech talent out here. And obviously this podcast here, Ben and I are going to be talking about the tech scene in Bulgaria, what TechPods does, how TechPods supports businesses, and generally, you know, the tech scene in Eastern Europe and Bulgaria specifically. So Ben, let's tell the listeners a little bit about your background, how you came to Bulgaria, because obviously your accent doesn't sound very Bulgarian.
So essentially, it's a long story. So I think it all started when my parents bought some real estate in 2004 or something in Bulgaria. So that was kind of, you know, how I found out about Bulgaria, let's say. And then from there, I ended up being offered a role at SAP in 2008, and because of, you know, and that was actually based in Sofia, and because I was already familiar with Bulgaria, I thought, yeah, why not? You know, I've been there, I know what it looks like, you know, in the EU now, stuff like that, so it was quite attractive, and I've always enjoyed traveling, so I thought, why not? You know, I was young at the time, and that's how I became, you know, kind of attached to Bulgaria. That's how it all started, and that's how my whole career in IT outsourcing started, actually. So, yeah.
So where did the idea for TechPods come from?
So, after probably a decade in IT outsourcing, the whole idea came from, you know, I'm not going to try and say that, you know, we're disruptors and all the rest of it. It essentially came from a lot of experience in the IT outsourcing field with various different companies. And one of the main kind of reasons for starting the company was I just saw most companies, all of the companies that I worked at especially, were very vague indeed. And there seemed to be, you know, an opportunity to just add a bit of transparency to the model. And
so you mean vague by it?
Vague in terms of the services. So, you know, positioning themselves as IT super companies. We have 50 developers here who can, you know, start on your projects tomorrow. You know, the pricing is this, and just very vague. Companies didn't really know what they were getting when they were engaging. So this is, you know, the TechPods model is very transparent, and the whole reason behind that is simply to position ourselves differently to other companies, because their models are very vague. So yeah, that's how we position ourselves, as being the transparent company.
So I mean, how are you transparent? What kind of, what makes you different in that sense?
Yeah, so essentially traditional IT outsourcing companies have a pricing model which is either hourly or daily, and you're not really sure what's included. You don't know if the developers are actually working in that company, or if they're actually going to be fully dedicated to you and stuff like that. So there isn't much visibility, whereas we have a very, very open pricing model. So we've got the dev salary, which is there for everyone to see. The developers really like that as well. The infrastructure fee, which covers essentially the desk, 4K screen, USB Type-C ports, everything you need to do a great job. And then we have a management fee, which is essentially where we make money. So we have everything open. And then we also have in our contracts that any developer placed with a particular client is fully dedicated to them, and then essentially blocked from working on any other projects.
Right, so what you're saying is that essentially all the costs are very clear. People know what they're paying for, they know that they're getting a dedicated person with the right facilities and equipment and all that.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you see, so the clients are getting full control, whereas with traditional IT outsourcing companies, you don't really have a lot of control. They barely know who they're dealing with, let alone, you know, what salaries they're getting. So that's basically how we structured the whole model.
So who's in your team? How many people have you got at the moment? And how is it all structured?
Yeah, so essentially there are two founders. We don't have any middle management or project managers or anything like that. We have two founders, essentially two Cs, CTO and CEO. So I'm driving the whole business development and growing the business, doing sales UK side. And then we have my Bulgarian partner who's in Sofia, essentially on hand to you know, help with any technical consulting, management and stuff like that. So we're a great team. And then we have HR manager. That's the only kind of middle management in the company, and the rest are all developers. So we have 13 at the moment, 1 year old. So actually within the first year, we only lost one person, which was really frustrating because it was right at the end of our first year as well. So I was like, damn, it's only one, but still, it could have been zero.
Yeah, that's quite a big achievement because usually, I mean, especially when you're looking at India, their attrition rate is quite high for most businesses. So how is it in Bulgaria? I mean, when I'm talking to the nearshoring companies in Portugal, one of the things they say that is that obviously Portugal's got great weather, good food, everyone's happy to live there, so there's no real... If they can find good jobs in Portugal, people don't necessarily want to leave. Is that kind of similar, the same case here in Bulgaria?
Yeah, exactly the same. So retention is... In Eastern Europe, I think people are a little bit more loyal and they're not really bothered by getting an extra couple of hundred quid per month. It's more about the environment they work in, the work they're doing, and if they're happy and if you keep them happy, then they will stick around. They don't have this, for example, desire to go to the UK, for example, because technology makes the world a smaller place now, right? So they can stay in Bulgaria, get a very good salary, live a very good life, look after their families, and essentially that's what keeps them happy.
So what kind of companies do you think should be nearshoring to Bulgaria? What kind of clients do you typically work with? What are the kind of key reasons for them to move to Bulgaria as opposed to somewhere else?
Yeah, so, if you talk about Bulgaria versus Poland or Ukraine or Portugal or something like that, I think pricing is a massive factor. We're very competitive with pricing. Bulgaria as a whole is still relatively cheap. Portugal, Poland, obviously great locations, but becoming very expensive. So that's probably the main kind of reason why companies would choose Bulgaria. But there are many advantages as well. In terms of, it's a 3-hour flight from London, you have 5 flights per day. The euro is pegged to the lev, the local currency. It's very, very stable within the EU. So it's a great location, and obviously all of that coupled with the low price, then why not? And obviously companies who are struggling to source talent in places like London, especially, we all know how crazy it is there. So we target London-based companies, but also we always look at companies based in smaller towns like Edinburgh, Newcastle, Manchester, Huddersfield, Bristol, places like this where the talent pool's restricted. We give them a whole fresh new talent pool to access, and the model really fits in with them because they're growing and they want developers to adapt to their company culture, and we fully support that. So any developers that we hire for them, we essentially build their software-based team. It's not a tech bots team or an outsourced company or them versus us. It's essentially we're growing their team here. So they have had this whole access to a brand new talent pool.
So, I mean, Bulgaria is not the biggest place on the planet. It's not the largest country around in the EU. So, how easy is it to source talent here? Because obviously you mentioned, smaller cities in the UK, but Sofia itself isn't huge. So how easy is it to get that the talent that you want? And what kind of range of technologies are prevalent here? What kind of...
So technologies, mainstream technologies you can find, as you can anywhere. So there are a lot of massive companies in Bulgaria. In Sofia itself, there are 2 million people. So it's not a small city, but then again, it's not London. You've got a lot of big companies here, the likes of IBM, Software AG, HP, VMware, Accenture. All these big companies have got, up to 5,000, 6,000 employees. There's a lot of talent here. 16 technical universities, various IT academies, there's a lot of talent. And we've positioned ourselves in a way where we are very transparent. Developers are actually sick of working for big companies. The best engineers don't want to work at big companies, simple as that. So it's really easy for us to kind of headhunt in these big companies. The way that we're so transparent makes a really massive positive impact on the local guys as well, so they really appreciate that. Everyone wants to be treated fairly, right? So that's basically what we do.
All right, cool. So you're based in Campus X here, which is a large, I don't know how to describe it, really it's kind of a big tech campus in the middle of Sofia. What difference does it make being here in Campus X? I've been around obviously the last week or so, and there's a lot of very interesting companies. You've got Payhawk, big business. Obviously Telerik was part of this building a while back, and that's, you've got some very, very interesting companies. So how is it to be here in this environment? And, is there a kind of burgeoning startup scene here in Sofia?
Yeah. So Campus X is arguably the best place, I think, any small tech company can be in Bulgaria. It is vibrant. There's a lot of companies here, as you said. The actual founders of Campus X are the original founders of Telerik. So they've got, you know, massive reputation, especially in Bulgaria, very well respected. And the actual campus model itself really matches our model. So we've got things like first refusal on office space, which is really good. So if we get you know, a prospect or a client who wants to have their own space or have their own team, we can accommodate that here. So it really works perfectly for us. We intentionally chose Campus X to grow our business. We've been here since, you know, there was like three of us. So the two founders and our first employee, and we were sitting in Campus X, and we were just looking at, you know, what the future beholds and how we can grow here. And, you know, that was a year ago. So now we're up to 13 people and we're still going strong. So it's a really good place as well, because you've got small kind of kitchen areas, chill out areas and stuff like that, where developers will share knowledge, sit with each other. You know, we've got shared Slack channels and stuff like that. So we're really, you know, embedded in the IT scene here. Not the IT scene as a whole, but the kind of startup scene. And that's where we want to be, because that's how you get your name out there a lot quicker. And being based at Campus X has given us a really good reputation. So when people see our job ads and stuff like that, they know us because of our positioning here. So it really works very well for us.
So you mentioned the technical universities. Are you guys involved very much in those universities with students coming through?
Yeah, so what we do is, so we'll do, the thing is with the universities is that every other company is doing the same thing, right? In terms of, if there's a career day, they'll go to the universities, they'll put their tables up and stuff like this. We do the same. We try to do the same. The thing is, our clients are not really coming here to demand, you know, to request junior, fresh, you know, graduates from universities. We do try to stay relevant with the younger people, but most companies are looking for seniors, right? Rockstar seniors for junior prices. So yeah, to answer your question, we are active, we are present, we do career days. One of our employees was a mentor in Telerik IT Academy, actually. So we do show massive interest in the youth, but we probably focus more on trying to attract senior talent as opposed to junior talent.
So how do you attract the talent?
Right, so obviously we've got kind of two angles on that. So it's probably like, we position ourselves as being the transparent IT outsourcing company, and that makes, you know, a great impression. But the way we do everything in-house, recruitment is all in-house. We don't use any agencies, we don't use, you know, any middlemen. We do absolutely everything in-house, and I do a lot of the recruitment as well. And this is probably my biggest challenge, is I need to clone myself and I need to be in two places at once, because if we're gonna grow, and we have been growing, I need to be here because it makes a really good impression on the locals, because I can speak Bulgarian. You know, the founder of the business is coming down to actually conduct interviews. People feel like we're making a massive effort, they feel special. So, and it's word of mouth. So most of our kind of success has been based on word of mouth. So we really protect our reputation. People are just coming to us saying, hey, my friend told me that you're looking for JavaScript devs. Can we set up an interview? Which is like, wow. Companies would love that, right? Because people are killing themselves to recruit talent. So we just focus a lot on our reputation. And as I said, we do everything in-house. We put a lot of hours in. We meet a lot of people. Even if that person's not interested, we'll still try and make a good impression, because you never know, you know, 2 months down the line, they'll come back to us.
So if a company's looking to outsource to Bulgaria, right? So a couple of questions there. Firstly, how does your process work with TechPorts?
Right, so the process is very clear. So essentially, once we've signed a contract with a client, we will establish a job spec. So we literally mirror the recruitment process. So if you've got these job specs live on job boards and stuff like that in the UK, we'll use these job specs here, and we'll just recruit in our client's name here. So it's as simple as that. So once we've established the job specs, then we engage the market. We will run first round interviews. So
what's happening in the first round interviews?
Yeah, so essentially, the CTO and myself, we both attend the interview. So we split the interview in half. So I'll start speaking English. We do everything in English, doing kind of the cultural fit, making sure that this person, you know, is a good fit culturally, got good English, you know, good experience and stuff like that. We talk about their interests. We get to know them as a person. And then the CTO will basically take over, do a live coding test, essentially a technical interview, but starting off very slowly and then getting very technical. And you know, we just want to see how far they can go. And then once we're satisfied that person is good technically and culturally, we will then refer that person to the client and say, you know, this person's really good. We've grilled them for an hour or 90 minutes. You know, we really, you know, recommend that you speak to them. And it's essentially, you know, from there, the client will run their, you know, interview process. Most of the time we've already grilled them quite a lot. So it's essentially a technical interview with the head of engineering or CTO client side. And then they'll say yes. They may administer a tech test, or it totally depends. It's client specific. So we mirror the client's recruitment methodologies, essentially.
So essentially what you're saying then is that you do the first piece of work where you're really trying to ground the customer, and then it's up to really the business itself to then put the rubber stamp on. So in your experience, what is the kind of best way for a business to approach this hiring process? So what have you seen that works from, so again, taking from the perspective of a company who's looking to outsource here, what do's and don'ts should you have? What kind of things would you recommend in order for this process to be as smooth as possible?
Well, it has to be clear, right? It has to be clear. You have to have that structure in place. And not just the recruitment, it's also the management as well. So all of these processes need to be structured very clearly. So when we are, you know, conducting the first round interview and we're filtering out all of the unsuitable candidates and we're you know, trying to find the most suitable ones, we explain to them from the very beginning how the process is, because they want to know. And essentially, if that's not made clear from the client side, you start running into problems. And it's all about communication, right? So the best way that we find is for that to be as streamlined as possible. So we put a lot into the first round interview. And then from there, you really should be looking at probably just having a technical conversation with the person who'll be managing that team, be it the CTO, head of engineering, you know, tech lead, whatever, to run, or a pair programming exercise even if they want to. So it's essentially trying to streamline it and trying to make it as short as possible. You don't want to be having third, fourth, fifth interviews, because other companies are not doing 3-4 interviews, and that candidate, if they're really good, is going to go somewhere else. So try and keep it as short as possible, be as clear as possible, probably do 1, maximum 2 interviews client side, and that's it.
So typically, how long is the process? How quickly can you get someone onto a client's team?
It really varies. So realistically, you're looking at somewhere between 6 and 8 weeks, because developers are usually employed and they've usually got a 1-month notice period. So that's with their notice period included. So we can act very quickly. We've got a strong database of clients. We've got, of candidates. We've got a really good pipeline. But we also find that, especially like around the summer, towards the end of the summer, we find a lot of developers who have taken the summer off and they just ping us, or they get in touch and say, look, next week I'm coming back from holiday, whatever, and I'm not, you know, tied to any company at the moment. I'm looking for a new start. So essentially, we found this year we've had probably 4 or 5 candidates that could start immediately, which is like, it's amazing. So then if your client is really dragging their heels and not sure, you know, you're missing out on fantastic candidates. So that's why I'm saying it has to be clear and concise, and from the client side, they have to know what they're looking for as well.
So obviously you're British, living in Bulgaria. There's, you know, a lot of people when they're out, like let's say for the country, being a UK person, like, you know, I'm British myself, right? And I've been outsourced, so working with developers from all over the world for a number of years, and there's lots of different, each country has their own different cultural quirks, let's say. So take for example, you know, that everyone knows the stories of Indians who never say no, always overpromise, underdeliver, that kind of thing. And with Portugal, you know, there's a different culture there. People start work later, they work later, but they're taking more breaks during the day. You know, what kind of cultural differences are there in Bulgaria as compared to the working ethics in the UK?
Yeah, so, funny you mentioned India and not being able to say no. Bulgarians are the opposite. So, you know, if you say, can you have this feature completed by, you know, the end of September, you're probably going to get a response. If it's not realistic, probably ask you if you're crazy. They will be very, very direct and say no. It's absolutely impossible, which is I find refreshing. The feedback I get from a lot of prospects and clients that I work with always give me great feedback on that and say it's so refreshing, especially if they've outsourced to India, because it's like, yeah, no problem, we'll get it done. And then like 2 weeks before it's supposed to go live, they're like, yeah, we're nowhere near. And then it obviously creates a whole range of different problems. So they will say no, they're very direct and very realistic. So me personally, I really love to work with people who are very direct, because you know where you stand, right? You know what you're doing, and that is basically Bulgarians in a nutshell. Probably that's why I've been here for 12 years now, right? Because they're easy to work with. Also, you'll find that they're very serious about the work. They like to own their work as well, which is really good. Take responsibility for it. You know, if they do something horrendously bad, they will hold up their hands and say, sorry, yeah, that's my fault, yeah, but let's fix it, sort of thing. So, yeah. Not sure how that differs to the UK, to be honest. Probably very similar to the UK, whereas, you know, people like to get work done and crack on. Bulgarians are the same. The culture's very similar as well. English is very well spoken. The music is very similar, I listen to. It's very, very close. I mean, English and Bulgarian culture is very, very close. Just that they have more traditions in Bulgaria, more... They do enjoy the time off, obviously. So in the summer, for example, if I go on a summer holiday, you can find me on LinkedIn, email, you can get me on my phone. If a Bulgarian goes on holiday, he just disappears off the face of the earth, which is, I wish I could be like that. Yeah. Whereas I'm not. So yeah, that's probably the best way to sum it up.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, the difference is you're running your own business as well, which makes it hard.
True that, yeah.
So what kind of companies do you think will successfully outsource? So out of your client base, you know, what's the profile of businesses that have successfully set up teams here? Because obviously, it's not for everyone, nearshoring in Bulgaria. Nearshoring is not for everyone, Bulgaria may not be for everyone. The ones who've succeeded, what have been the reasons that they've succeeded?
Yeah, I think difficult to kind of profile a specific company. It all depends on their needs, really. You literally, in terms of the ideal company or the companies that we target, again, talking about the processes, everything has to be clear. You have to have a CTO in place. You cannot manage a remote team if you don't have a CTO in place. We've refused business with certain companies who, you know, it's been the CEO and they've reached out and said, hey Ben, you know, we want to build a team looking at 4 developers, and you know, we start talking a bit more, and you know, they reveal that they don't have a CTO at the moment. They're probably going to look at hiring a more senior person and probably trying to manage them. And I just stepped back and said, look, we're not a good match. You know, you have to have, because at the end of the day, both parties are going to be unhappy with the whole service, because the CEO will find out they can't properly manage a tech team. The tech team will be, you know, unhappy because the processes aren't clear and the CEO doesn't really know what they want. So it all depends. I mean, you've got to have the processes in place. And if you're a company struggling to find talent, and you may not have a restricted budget, sometimes that is a factor, but if you're struggling to find talent and you don't want to pay the London salaries, then, you know, Bulgarian outsourcing is definitely for you. I wouldn't say that we work with any company, because we don't. We really profile them. We look at, you know, in an ideal world, the technologies that they're working with. If they're working with some real, you know, old legacy system, we'd probably say, look, we're probably not going to be able to find you anybody. We're very honest from the outset. If we can build a team, we'll be very honest about it and say, yeah, we can do this, let's crack on. If we can't, we'll probably step back and say, let's just avoid, you know, wasting each other's time, and we go in a different direction.
So what does the future hold for TechBots?
Well, we keep going, we stay strong, we keep going. We've grown very well in the first year. I'm very happy with our progress. I mentioned before about being in two places at once. So I do all the sales stuff in the UK and obviously, you know, management as well in Bulgaria. So I'm in both places at once. I do a lot of traveling back and forth. So spend more time in the UK, get more clients. We want to grow steadily. By the end of the year, we should be up to about 20 employees, hopefully, if everything goes well. And then by the end of next year, we should be up to about 30, 40. So after that, we don't really want to exceed 50, 60 employees, to be honest. But if we do, we're not going to complain. With the model, we can essentially sign a deal tomorrow with a company for a team of 50, because the model supports that, right? But realistically, I really want to kind of preserve the whole TechPods model and keep it, you know, keep it a really good place to work. So and stay agile. So once you start exceeding, once you start getting to 100, you become a bit bigger, your churn rate really increases. You just have a different kind of model. So yeah, the future is we just keep growing and try, just don't stray away from our model and just keep building the business.
Cool. So last couple of questions. So I've seen you on TV in Bulgaria. So how did that come about?
Yeah, so we started a small football academy for kids who essentially were from poorer areas, from orphanages and stuff like that. So we started a football academy, because I'm a Sunderland fan, unfortunately. We called it the Sunderland Football Academy, and it became quite well known. And then because I can speak Bulgarian, one of the presenters got in touch with me and was like, okay, you have a football academy called the Sunderland Academy. You've got a Bulgarian Sunderland supporters branch, which is an official fan club, with the Bulgarian flag up at the Stadium of Light and stuff like that. So we do quite a lot of stuff there. And obviously they heard about that, and we spoke, we had a conversation in Bulgarian, and they were like, look, we want to have you as a pundit on the TV when the Sunderland games are on. So basically it started from there. Thankfully, there aren't a lot of Sunderland games on TV nowadays, so they don't bother me as much. But yeah, when we're on TV, I'll generally go in the studio.
Cool.
A lot of fun.
So the last question is, if you go back in time 20 years and give your younger self advice, what would advice
you give? Oh, good question. Don't pursue a career in IT outsourcing. No, joking. I think I did okay. I pursued everything I wanted to pursue. While you're young, have fun, stay active, and yeah, just never give up.
Oh, well, sound advice.
Yeah.
All right, cheers for that, Ben.
Thank you very much, mate. Thanks a lot.